provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenes, based on the most relevant posts on LinkedIn about defense tech in CW 46 and 47. Frenes is a B2B market research company that equips product and strategy teams with market and competitive intelligence across the defense industry. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping straight into the strategic shifts we're seeing in defense tech, all based on the professional conversations from LinkedIn in calendar weeks 46 and 47.
And looking at the material, one thing is just crystal clear. There is a fundamental pivot happening right now.
A huge one.
Yeah. We're moving away from this old model of just buying, you know, single pieces of hardware. The whole conversation now is about integrated system.
It's all about integration. Software, factories, networks. Even capital markets are being treated as core technologies now.
Exactly. And the posts we've seen give really concrete examples of this. We're talking new drones, submarines, new comm systems.
So it's not just theory. You can see it in the metal and in the code.
Right. So we've broken it all down into five major themes that really dominate the conversation. Let's start with the one that underpins everything else. The industrial base itself.
The idea that the factory is the weapon.
The factory is the weapon. That's the phrase you see everywhere.
It's this shift in thinking where sheer mass production capacity is now seen as the decisive capability, even more so than just having the single most advanced piece of tech.
Sir Stevens drove that point home really effectively. He argued that, you know, defense preparedness now relies almost entirely on that capacity for mass production.
And we're seeing startups pivot hard towards that. Ali Javaheri pointed out that 2026 seems to be the year for it.
Oh, for sure.
He named names Castilian, Epirus, and Dural, all committing serious capital to actually scale up their manufacturing.
Which is a huge deal. You have this venture capital speed now crashing into old school industrial discipline.
A tough combination to get right.
Very tough.
Yeah.
But they're becoming these critical players in the supply chain. You can see it really clearly in these strategic bottlenecks, like solid rocket motors.
The SRM market. Matthew Fulco laid that out really well. It used to be this quiet little duopoly.
Right. Complacent. But now with this massive demand, it's becoming this hyper-competitive strategic industry.
And that's where a company like Anduril comes in.
Exactly. They saw the bottleneck and just moved. They put $75 million of their own money into a new SRM facility in Mississippi.
And what's the output they're targeting?
It's huge. 6,000 tactical motors a year by the end of 2026.
6,000. That kind of private investment speed just completely changes the game for the big traditional primes.
It does. And it's not just a U.S. thing either. Over in the U.K., James Lawson noted that they just opened their first resilience factory.
In Plymouth, right.
Yep. And its entire purpose is rapid iteration for autonomous systems. So the physical footprint is changing globally to reward speed.
Okay, so the factories are getting faster. That brings us to our next theme. What are they actually building? Drones and autonomy.
And here, the conversation has moved on. The airframe itself. I mean, it's almost a commodity now.
That's what Tom G, a senior UAV pilot, was saying. The real race is in the electronics, the stuff you don't see.
Right. The resilient, scalable electronics. The questions everyone's asking now are, what happens when your GPS is jammed? When your data links are degraded or spoofed?
How does the system handle messy, partial data instead of needing a perfect picture?
Exactly. And that onboard intelligence is enabling completely new tactics. Matt Bev detailed AFSO's A2E strategy.
Where they use the MQ-9 drone as a kind of mothership.
A mothership and a network node, yeah. They can send a smaller, cheaper LTS drone into the high-threat areas.
So you risk the attritable asset, not the multi-million-dollar platform.
It's just a smarter way to distribute risk and extend your reach. It's about mass and intelligence.
Which, of course, means the counter-drone race is heating up just as fast.
Oh, absolutely. Bojan Stojkowski basically called 2025 the year of the interceptor drone.
And we're seeing them emerge. You have the European MBDA Sky Warden system that Florent Dooley was talking about.
And that AI-powered MAROPS interceptor that Mark CL highlighted. It did really well at a NATO live fire exercise in Poland.
It all comes down to a race for time.
It does.
Wow.
Which explains the money. Evan Loomis mentioned that CIOS Industries just closed a $510 million Series D round.
Wow.
And their whole focus is on advanced radars that give you more time. They track targets minutes sooner and from much farther away than the legacy systems can.
And in a swarm attack, a few minutes is everything.
It's the difference between success and failure. And this push for autonomy isn't just in the air either. It's going deep.
Right. Down into the subsurface. Keith King reported on Australia's massive investment. What was it? $1.7
billion? Yeah, $1.7 billion to mass produce the Ghost Shark.
These are the extra large autonomous underwater vehicles.
AUVs, yeah. developed with Endural Australia. And these things can operate beyond 5,000 meters deep. We're talking deep ocean ISR and strike capability.
Which is not just about military targets. It's about protecting all that critical subsea infrastructure, like internet cables.
Exactly. The defense mission is expanding into new economic territory.
Speaking of expansion, that's a perfect lead-in to our third theme, the collapse of traditional domains, space, firepower, and networked integration.
It's all connected now. Space isn't some separate domain anymore. It's absolutely central to maritime, air, and ground operations.
Joseph Aschbacher pointed out that growing link between space and marine economies.
Yeah, with ESA's Sentinel satellites enabling everything from border security to law enforcement at sea.
And having your own way to get there remains critical. Tony Tolker-Nielsen framed the Ariane 6 rocket as this big symbol of European cooperation for sovereign access to space.
And once you're up there, or anywhere really, you need firepower that actually works. It sounds basic, but reliability is everything.
Brian Kubik announced a record-setting day for PAC-3 missile intercepts at White Sands. That continuous testing and proving is non-negotiable.
But the real game changer, like we said at the top, is integration.
For sure. Chandra Marshall and Ray Pacelli were discussing plans to integrate the European IRIS-T missile into the U.S. Aegis system.
Which sounds technical, but that is a massive deal.
It's the first European missile ever to be integrated like that.
They pull it off, yeah. It would be a huge leap forward for Allied interoperability. A policy win and a tech win all at once.
You see that same logic in procurement. Glenn Copeland highlighted Germany picking Lockheed Martin Canada's CMS-330 combat management system. It's another move toward allied fleets that can operate as one.
But again, none of this works. The missiles, the ships, the sensors, without the network tying it all together.
The secure communication layer.
Right. That's why you saw so much attention on things like the Airbus DCIS showcase at Steadfast Cobalt 25.
And that European 5G CumPad demonstration, that one involved Rheinmetall, SAB and Thales showing off resilient tactical comms. It's not just a concept anymore.
It's deployable reality. Which brings us to a tricky subject. We have the tech, we have the factory spinning up.
Yeah.
But is the policy keeping pace?
Ah, theme four. Policy, strategy, and the gaps. And there's some real friction here.
Sure.
Andrew Park described the new U.S. acquisition reform plans from Secretary Hegseth as a complete restructuring.
Not just a tweak.
No, making speed and usable capability the absolute center of gravity for how they buy things.
But that focus on speed isn't everywhere. Thomas Lucas was blunt about the U.K.'s defense posture being misaligned with current threats.
Specifically calling out the lack of a fully funded air and missile defense strategy.
A huge gap. And then you get to examples that are, well, almost absurd.
The tank bubble in Germany. Jonas Singer laid this out. The cost for a new Leopard 2A tank is nearly 5 times the historical price.
And at the same time, they have a massive manpower shortage.
Right. They lack the 4-person crews, not to mention the 10 to 15 support staff you need for every single tank.
So you're buying thousands of vehicles you can't even operate.
He called it the world's most expensive parking lot. It's capacity without capability.
And you contrast that inertia with what's happening in Ukraine. Denise Fiatokum reported on real capital flowing in now.
The $250 million Rebuild Ukraine Fund and over 140 million euros from the EU for dual-use tech.
They're actively trying to integrate Ukraine into Europe's resilience strategy.
Which is great, but Maria Cherpak and Ilya Chikineva pointed out that despite all the talent there, the Ukrainian defense tech sector is still massively undercapitalized to really scale up.
Ingenuity can only get you so far without serious industrial investment.
Which brings us to our final theme, the startup ecosystem and a fascinating paradox around AI.
Yeah, these startups, the so-called war unicorns, a term from Pete Modigliani, they're really driving the pace. You've got over $180 billion in VC pumped into defense tech in just the last 5 years.
But as you said, they're hitting some major roadblocks, especially with AI. Burak Otto was on a panel about AI certification, and he flagged a core legal paradox.
It's a tricky one.
Very. If a human pilot makes a mistake, the human is responsible. Simple enough.
Right.
But an AI agent isn't a legal entity. So if it makes a catastrophic error, who is liable? The developer. The operator. the person who supplied the data.
Nobody knows. And that lack of clarity is a huge brake on deployment.
And there's a societal hurdle, too, that's even stranger. Burak Atta shared this thought experiment.
The one about driving in Germany.
That's the one. He said, hypothetically, AI could cut car accident rates in half, a huge net gain for safety.
Why?
But society would likely reject the few remaining deaths if they were caused by a machine. We have this paradoxical tolerance for human error that we don't extend to AI.
It's a huge challenge. And it's why so much of the strategic talk comes back to software. Britta Jacob made the case that software-defined defense is essential for deterrence and growth. It's about agility.
You see that agility with companies like ARX Robotics. Stefan R. was showcasing how their software, the Mithra OS, lets them innovate in cycles measured in months.
Not years or decades, like the traditional prime.
Exactly. And that speed gets you results fast. Oleksandr Serbin shared this incredible example from a defense tech hackathon.
What was that like?
They built a prototype AI system that analyzes geotagged photos and videos. So, say, for a drone sighting near an airport, it cut the emergency response time from hours down to seconds.
From hours to seconds.
Just with smarter software. It's a tangible, life-saving impact.
So, if we pull all of this together, I mean, the one big takeaway from these 2 weeks is that we are watching the very definition of military capability change in real time.
It's not just about heavy metal anymore.
Not at all. It's about speed, it's about software, and it's about the industrial base's ability to deliver at scale. That's what's decisive now.
Which leaves us with a final, provocative thought for you to consider. We're seeing governments buy incredibly expensive human-intensive equipment like those German tanks that need huge, vulnerable crews. At the same time, frontline reports all stress that the human operator is the single most valuable and vulnerable target.
Mm-hmm.
So given that societal paradox that Burak Atta mentioned, our strange tolerance for human error, how quickly will procurement systems adapt? How fast will they pivot to prioritizing force-multiplying autonomy over systems that demand the one asset we can least afford to lose? If you enjoyed this deep dive, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also check out our other editions on ICT and Tech Insights, Health Tech, Cloud, Digital Products and Services, Artificial Intelligence, and Sustainability in Green ICT. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive, and be sure to subscribe for more insights tailored directly to your industry.